Welcome to Season 2 of Coping Kit for Everyday Life. I'm Genevieve.
And I'm Michelle. This season's theme is change. Together, we will explore tools for coping with the ordinary and the extraordinary changes in life. Well, hello, Genevieve.
Hello, Rochelle. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited today that we're going to have a special guest, someone who's near and dear to me, Tony Miller, who's been my mentor and dear friend for such a long time. And I feel like, you know, we've been talking about, like, how do we cope and change? And we've been talking about different things in our toolbox. We talked about tapping. We've talked about writing. We've talked about art, exercise, movement. And I was thinking, you know, what is the one thing that I usually do when I'm coping and change, especially this huge transition, because you all know I moved out to California, is that, you know, talking to, you know, my mentors, talking to friends and colleagues and people to kind of support me through the journey. And Tony's actually been one of those people who's been helping me out and just really helping me do this transition. So I want to introduce you to one of my dear friends and mentor, Tony Miller. So welcome to our podcast. We're so excited to have you here with us today. So please introduce yourself to our audience.
Thanks, Rochelle. And you're my dear friend, too. And hi, Genevieve. You're a dear friend, too. Hi, everybody. I am Tony Miller, and I have been a certified child life specialist. Well, I've been a child life specialist for almost 30 years and was one of the first ones. Didn't realize you get a number of your certification, and mine's one of the early ones. So been around a while.
What's your number? I'm curious.
2730.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's really nice to be here with you today. And yeah, life is full of a lot of changes. So you really helped me kind of reflect on some of that for myself.
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, it's so funny you asked your number. I feel like I need to tell mine. Mine's 1563. I'm fascinated by the number that people's numbers in child life, where, like, I see my staff now, they're like in the thousands. And I'm like, wow, there's so many child life specials. So anyway, an aside, but just interesting. So, you know, I think about all of us here, child life specialists, and I want to think about, like, in, you know, as a child life specialist, like, how have you helped patients and families cope through transitions and change?
Well, I've had a lot of different roles in child life to be able to help families. As a clinician, I was able to work with children and families, and my area was the pre-surgery and then the post-surgery floor. So that was my first job after I became a child life specialist. And, you know, I think the usual, so being able to use developmentally appropriate explanations for things and helping prepare kids, be it before surgery, a lot of it, in thinking about it, a lot of it was advocacy, you know, so kind of, you know, in the old timey days, there was a lot more resistance to including families to be part of their child's treatment. It was more of a, hey, just stay by the door. Or, you know, as far as surgery was, you know, we even had the head of anesthesia at the hospital that I worked at. I don't know where he got his developmental theory from, but he was like, children don't remember anything before three. And, you know, babies will never remember if they're separated from their parents and, you know, all of that kind of thing. So a lot of my work was advocacy and being able to, you know, be the voice for the families when they were kind of kept, and then being able to make incremental changes, I think, in policy and viewpoints in the hospital. And then as my professional trajectory changed and I then got into leadership, it was nice to be able to use those advocacy skills to be able to help change policy, to be able to be the voice at the table with other leaders who weren't thinking about families first and pediatric, you know, and developmental needs as far as treatments, I mean, all kinds of things. And I had the great fortune to work with the legendary Mary Barkey. And so things that we take for granted now, like positioning, comfort positioning, and parental presence, that was her fight. And, you know, being able to learn from her and continue that work and being part of that initial change was really, I don't know, it was really nice. It was challenging. And then I think, and then my leadership changed, and then I became a senior leader at a major hospital system in New York City. And so being able to, I think, continue to be that voice and to really promote the patient and family advisory councils, which I think for a while were really just a checkmark on a paper somewhere, and to really help the administration understand the importance of their voice and to make sure that they were brought in to the table. And when I left that role, I think there was still a struggle, but we had made some progress. So I think, you know, being able to go back to your questions, like, I think being able to help children and families, sometimes it was hands-on, and a lot of times as my role changed, it was behind the scenes, being able to make a broader sweeping statement of how that change could happen for more patients and families.
I'm really intrigued by this idea of advocacy as part of being used as a tool for supporting change, not only like advocating for individual children and families, but also advocating for, you know, the overall well-being of children and families in an institution, but also thinking about that not only from a professional standpoint, from also from a personal one as well, like sort of thinking, how do we advocate for ourselves when we are experiencing change, and really what do we need, and really being able to identify what supports us when we're making those changes. And I wonder, like, if there's just thinking about some of the things that you did in your professional life, how do those things carry over into your personal life, and how, and thinking about how have you had to advocate for yourself when you've been making different changes?
Well, it's a really good question. Well, I think just me and my personality, it was way easier for me to advocate for others than for myself. And, you know, I could, you know, be the tiger in the room when it came to patients and families and children in the hospitals. But, you know, sticking up for myself, I think I had to learn how to do that, and through trial and error. And I, you know, I kind of also had this fortitude of, you know, I can do it all by myself kind of thing. And that didn't work so well. So I think learning by trial and error, and the error was not asking for help and strategies to cope, and thinking I was supposed to have all of that all by myself time, all the time. And yeah, it was, I think it probably became more of when I got more into leadership roles, and there was a lot of, there was stress from other, you know, this is up here is the administration of the hospital and all of the politics and all of that kind of stuff. And then the staff who were counting on me to take certain things up to this and get changes made, and that squeeze in between of, I didn't want to let the staff down, but there were times where no meant no up here. And how do I, you know, how did I mitigate that? And so I think that's where I learned a lot more to ask for help and find help. And if my usual channels of support were great, but I needed somebody totally subjective, who wasn't going to look at me and go, I love you, whatever you do is fine. And so finding professional help when I needed it was so, so helpful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like the idea, Tony, what you're saying is like this thing of having support, and that how it's interesting how when you're doing it for someone else, because we're all trial specialists in the room, so we're meant like to help other people, so we're going to advocate for them, we're going to do whatever it's to support them. But then when it's us, we kind of go, well, I can take care of it, I can do it on my own. And I think it always comes back to like a show we had last season about having support, like mm-hmm. being able to have your people who support you through whatever you're going through. And I think same thing with change is that being willing to ask for help, which sometimes can be challenging, because I think that's where I struggle sometimes, is that mm-hmm. I probably could need help with something, but I'll probably do a couple things and probably go, okay, well, maybe I should ask somebody for some help here. We're learning that it's okay to do that. So it's so funny. I wonder, where do we learn that we can't ask for help? We're like in a helping profession, but then we don't ask for help for ourselves. So it's very interesting that you said that. And also too, like you say, like when you're going through a change and that, you know, there's certain things that are in your control and certain things that are not, and you're trying to do something for someone else, the struggle, that pressure that comes up and trying to navigate that. And I think that's true, like in transition, like when you're trying something new, like, you know, it's a great thing. You want to move forward and do this thing, but like there's the stress of it all, trying to like navigate it because you try to do all things at once. Mm-hmm. So kind of identify with that.
That's so true. And if I could just add to that, I think, you know, well, thinking about that, we were going to talk about change usually has a negative connotation, but actually I started thinking about some of the wonderful things that have happened and have like growth and innovation and all of those things, and how it's like, you know, I've got this shoulder, this little, you know, gremlin on the shoulder going, this sounds so cool, let's check it out. And this one's like, ooh, I don't think so, you know. And it's this kind of inner struggle of how and when and all of that type of thing. But, you know, a lot of the change that has happened, I mean, you know, like you talked about your move, and I've had some big moves in my life too. And sometimes I was like, I'll take New York, for instance. I was petrified to move. I'm a Midwest girl, lived in the East, but never lived in New York. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am really not. And I got the job offer and my husband's like, yes. And I'm like, And I fell in love with New York. I miss it so much. And yet here I am in a place that I wanted to move back to. We lived in Maine at one point in our lives, and here we are again. And I was really looking forward to it. And yet that change threw me way off my balance because there were a lot of other factors involved in it. So it's just sometimes you can't always put it in one camp or the other. It sometimes has a lot of mixed feelings.
Yeah. And I like things, change can be good. It doesn't have to be, it's transition. Yeah. So a lot of people, I keep saying, just enjoying the journey. Like really, it's going to have a mix of different things, but we just try to enjoy it all, and, you know, and see how you grow.
But I think it's important to also recognize the challenges and the difficulty of that, right? Like that it is a mixed bag, that there are both of those, that those two things can happen simultaneously.
Absolutely.
Sad and happy. We can look forward to something and miss something. Like we can have both of these experiences at the same time, you know, and you know, like
and that's okay.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like I remember when I left being a clinical specialist after 20 years, I really was like, who am I?
Yes.
You know? Yes. Who am I if I'm not a child life specialist at a hospital? You know, like and redefine, and it was exciting to redefine and figure out what my next steps were, but it was also really scary because I had to build a whole new network. I had to build, you know, it was a very challenge, and there weren't people doing that at the time, right? There wasn't really something that people were doing either, but it was both of those things, the excitement for something new, but the loss of, I remember sitting in the office handing my letter crying, saying, I won't be working with Rochelle anymore. I think I did say that, you know, like, but letting go of something, you know, thinking that it was going to be, you know, the end of something and yet the beginning of something else.
Yeah. Did I cry too? That's so funny. Actually, before I went to tell my boss I'm resigning, I went to one of the health coaches at the hospital and I'm literally bawling. And she's like, are you okay? I'm fine. I'm doing something that's really good, but it's been 30 years. I don't, you know, but it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like you're leaving something that has meaning to you. And yet, you know, this is new thing. So it's that bittersweet kind of thing going on. But it's so funny we said that. Yeah. Totally identify with that. Tears flow. You know, to finally give the letter, I'm like, here. And then I put my poor boss in shock. She was like, you doing what? And you all, where? You know, so it's funny. But yeah, it's like that. But I agree with you. And I always tell my clients too, it's like both can live. You can have both feelings in the same space, and that's okay. And just being able to acknowledge both of them, that they exist, the sadness and the happiness, you know, the apprehensiveness and the joy, like they can all live together.
Mm-hmm. And giving both the attention, the space, I don't know what the right word is.
Giving it the space that it needs and to honor it and to let yourself process will help you to move forward.
Yeah. And so with that, what are some things, Tony, that you do that help you, that have helped you with those changes, the processing of it and the, you know, like, what are some things that you do that help you cope with those big changes in your life?
A lot of different things. I know the answer is supposed to be like exercise, but I don't really do that.
No, it's so, your answer. whatever's in your
mind. I said that, but you know, I really go to my friends and my family first and talking about it. And, you know, I have an amazing husband who, you know, we've been together for 40 something years. And so, you know, knows me well, knows the patterns. And it's like, okay, you know, when I'm like, well, up here, whatever. And he's like, all right, so let's think about all those other changes that you've had and how did you get through it? And, you know, he's kind of that voice of reason. And I think, too, just being able to, and I think you said it earlier, Rochelle, and I'm guessing you do the same thing, Ben, because, you know, kind of sometimes you just be around people that love you and support you and you love them and know that you're safe and be able to say whatever it is that you need to say. And to me, that just calms me down for them, my brain to be able to think, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, this is not exactly like that last time, but here are parts that, and what did I do? And, you know, and so being able to look at the coping skills that you've used before, and sometimes they fit, and sometimes this is a situation that needs something totally different. And then, you know, that's when sometimes your support people are like, well, you know, this may, you know, what about this or what about this? And they might give out suggestions, or it might just be going back to that professional help of somebody, maybe at this point I need somebody who's totally looking at the bigger picture and might be able to say, this sounds like X, Y, and Z, and help me, my brain can't go back to what I've done before or a solution or a plan to be able to get through. And so I'll use my transition to Portland again, you know, so here I was, we were so excited to get back to a place that we loved. And to kind of what you said, Genevieve, like I had just ended, you know, being working with an organization, it was the beginning of COVID. So we had all of these just, I mean, you name it, everybody had that just dumping on them. And so I kind of lost my identity. I lost New York. Like the vision of what I thought coming back to a place that we had lived and loved was going to be just pick up the pieces and go. And it was totally different. And so it really threw me off. And so it was kind of taking that deep breath and being able to go, okay, wait, what are the things? Like, why did I think it was going to be just like, you know, the last time we lived here was before we even had kids. So a whole lot of life has happened, you know, and what do I have going now? And I'm meeting all these new people. And, you know, and it wasn't trying to be like Susie Sunshine. It was really trying to be able to look at, but what's the reality? And the reality was actually lovely. And, you know, and I love doing stuff outdoors. And this is an outdoorsy place. Like, you're dressed up if you got a flannel shirt and, you know, your hiking boots on. And so this is my kind of place. And so I think being able to recalibrate your expectations and, you know, kind of what you thought something was supposed to be like and what it really is. And also kind of going back to those regular coping skills. So a little, you know, mixed salad on that one.
I like that, a big salad. That's good. Big
salad. Yeah, I like the framing around recalibration also. Like, what was it I was envisioning in my head versus what the reality is?
Yeah.
Which is always a challenge to reconcile, I think. But yeah, it's really interesting to sort of think about what were my expectations and what's really happening, right? And how do I balance those, or how do I cope with whatever is really occurring? And is what's really occurring, even though it's not what I thought it was going to be, is that bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I like that whole thing about expectations, because you go in thinking it's going to be a certain way, but then being able to, like you said, recalibrate, but also just allowing yourself to see what becomes of that, because actually mm-hmm. may become something that you haven't even envisioned it could be. Mm-hmm. And then just allowing yourself to, you know, it's a great time to form an intention, like, you know, just, yeah. just practice, you know, being compassionate with myself right now as I figure this all out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Rochelle, you're so good at bringing up all of our past episodes.
Yeah.
Even when I'm into these ones, with all the things on that we've talked about.
Yes, it all weaves together. It all helps. It all brings us, you know, puts us back, all those tools in that coping bag that we're building together.
So that brings us to our takeaway. So Rochelle, you want to explain the takeaway?
Yeah. So Tony, and what we'd like to do at the end of the show is just really kind of think about, like, what is something that you're going to take away from this session? Something that was like aha moment, something like, okay, this is something that kind of captured my interest, so to speak, and I'm going to take this away with me. So that's the question. So I'll start off. I think I like this whole idea when you said about the recalibration of the expectations, because I think a lot of times, you know, we expect something to be a certain way, but then allowing yourself to kind of say, okay, maybe it's not going to be exactly what I thought, but just being okay with that in a sense. Mm-hmm. I think that was meaningful for me. I'm going to take that away.
I would say my takeaway was really the idea of thinking about sort of the both and, right? That things can have both positive and negative feelings about things, or that, and I was also thinking about fear in that, like I'm often like fearful of change and don't really like change, not a big fan. And yet that can live alongside of the excitement for it also of something new, of something challenging. And like, I do like new and challenging projects, but I don't always like to let go of other stuff I'm doing. Yeah. So having those things kind of all mixed together and understanding that those things can live together for me. And how about you, Tony? What's your takeaway today?
Well, I'm glad you guys went first because it gave me a chance to kind of think about it. But I think the other is that the change isn't static. Change is change. And you have to be able to understand, you know, as I was talking with you and thinking through like, okay, well, what worked in one situation as a coping style or coping technique may not work for another one. And so being able to also kind of be a little bit fluid in how to actually observe the change, understand the change, and then challenge the change, you know, being able to find a technique that fits for that particular change. And I think that, you know, as I've gotten older in life, I think that I've gotten much more accepting that there's not just one or three or five answers, that there are a lot more answers. And so being able to, you know, when something happens and I use a coping technique and it's not working, then I go back to the book, you know, to my toolkit and think, all right, well, try another one. Sometimes it takes a few to get to the right thing, but I think just having a coping kit is actually really, really helpful for people to consciously think about it. So that's my kind of a combination. I'm really glad that you asked about that. And I'm really glad that we were able to talk about this whole thing. It's not simple.
No. Not simple, but I love that what you're saying too, is that, you know, being able to look at there's different things that are going to happen at different times. So I think it's perfect, you know, and why we do this podcast is that we want people to have so many different tools at hand and using the right tool at the right time to support them through change. So, you know, we always like to leave our audience with something to kind of do a food for thought and continuing this, you know, discussion, but with others is that, you know, take an opportunity to connect with your support team. It could be a friend, a family member, a mentor, whoever it is that who's like really important to you, and really, you know, maybe have kind of share your experience of what you're going through right now. And, you know, one of the questions I would say is, you know, in the moment right now when you're in transition, you know, how can you see this transition period as what's a gift or an opportunity that is presented to you right now during the transition? Could be a great question to ask and kind of talk about with your mentor or colleague. And then also think about right now, like, because you're going through this transition, but what's already available to you? What's supporting you? Right now doing the transition, because a lot of times we don't realize that we're naturally doing things that support us. Also having that dialogue about that as we continue together.
I just want to add, because Tony just brought up something at the end as part of her takeaway, that for our listeners to maybe think about what were tools that you used in other circumstances and in other challenges in your life that you might be able to use or adapt, even making a list of those things to really think about what's appropriate for the situation that you're in now, or what is working for you, or something that worked for you before that you might use now.
Love it. So yeah, creating a list of things that have helped you in the past and maybe things that are working for you now. So, you know, because we're all on this journey of creating a coping kit for everyday life. So I think that's a great homework assignment. So I love it. So until next time.
All right. Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us. It was really so great to have you here. We're just so excited to have the chance to talk with you about change.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Bye now.